Welcome, folks. Time for another Bruins post-game podcast as the Stanley Cup playoffs roll along here. The Bruins officially moving on to the next round. I did not jinx them. I did not jinx the Bruins. I let that slip out after last game. So, you know, I was like the Jordan Peele gif, sweating my ass off, hoping they would just close it out tonight and, you know, get it over with. And they pulled it off. I guess you could say they pulled it off because the Bruins outshot 41-19 tonight, and yet they beat the Capitals 3-1. They eliminate the Washington Capitals. DC bows out in the first round again, continuing the tradition under Alex Ovechkin. They got the one cup, which is good. Good for them. They had that much-earned, much-deserved cup. Every other year, it's a first or second-round exit. They wilt. They don't respond particularly well to adversity or pressure. I think that goes back to the captain, who was the identity of the team, and we saw that frustration boil over pretty damn early in this whole unraveling with the way he crapped on his own goalie, Ilya Samsonov, who was okay when he was in there, but the guys in front of him really sort of let him down, I thought. The story tonight for the Bruins, I think, is Tuukka Rask, 40 saves for number 40. I mean, we can quibble on the quality of all their shots, but I mean, 40 saves is 40 saves. The guy closed out a series on the road. You have to give him credit. And I know that there will be goalpost moving, in the most insufferable debate of our lifetimes, Ty Anderson. This is Matt Dolliff, by the way, of 98 by the Sports Hub, here with the great Ty Anderson, who was on the air earlier today on Sunday, doing a little extended pregame with old Tim McBone over there. That was a fun time. I heard you guys in the car, and you said going into the game that you wanted to see a lot out of that top line, and that top line delivered as well. David Pastrnak with just an absolute unspeakable filth on that one goal he scored. Patrice Bergeron, two goals. But just to circle back to Tuukka Rask, Ty, big night for him. He had one really big save. I forget who took the shot, but it was, you know, a cross-ice pass, and he was just – it was classic Tuukka. He was in position. I think it really frustrated them because he saw the play coming a mile away. He anticipated it perfectly. He was in perfect position, and he made the stop. And, like, he makes those kinds of saves look easy, where a lot of other goalies would have to dive across or, you know, really go side to side. But he makes that look nice and easy and smooth, and Tuukka Rask was locked in. And I thought he was locked in the last game, even though he wasn't tested as much. He was tested a lot tonight. And he came through. So, I mean, my big takeaway is the performance of Tuukka Rask. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, he made the saves he needed to make with his team under siege. I really liked that save you're talking about. That was Lars Eller to Connor Sheary. Sheary's all alone to Rask's left. Rask doesn't even panic at all. He doesn't bite on Eller at all. He's going to Sheary's side the entire way. So that's a great save. That's a save that you need at that point in the game. And then you go to his second period, really not a ton of work in terms of quality chances against. I think his best work, I mean, he had some great saves when the Bruins were down a man in that period. He also, he got a little bit of lucky break there with that Kuznetsov shot that doesn't hit the net. I mean, there's nobody within 20 feet of Kuznetsov, and he just doesn't even hit the net. I mean, that's an example of, you know, the difference in this series, right? And so, but Tuukka was phenomenal really since that game one loss. And even in the game one loss, he made some big saves, I thought, to keep the Bruins in it, to force that overtime. So, but in particular, these last four games, he's been phenomenal. 949 save percentage since game two. Obviously, jeez, Tonight, 40 saves, just dialed in. I mean, this was vintage Rask where you're sitting there and you're watching the game and you're going, okay, how many quality looks have the Capitals had? Because when Rask is on and he's tracking pucks so well, it makes everything look so damn easy. And I think there were quite a few easy saves tonight, but even the hard ones, I mean, the Sheary one, for example, he's making them look easy because he's just so dialed in and tracking everything so well. There were a few shots that the Caps had through traffic where Rask is just corralling it, just easy. And it's like, how is he seeing that? Like, so this was really like vintage dialed in Tuukka Rask and really at the best possible moment, right? Didn't give them any life. I said this today on the air and I truly believe this was the big difference for me in this series. You look at when the Caps would score a goal or get a lead. It never ballooned. It never got more than one. He was always there to stop the bleeding. And even in the third period, it's a 2-1 game. They score 11 seconds in. They got momentum. They got some energy. And what does he do? He shuts them down, right? Like, that is what makes him an elite goaltender in this league, is the fact that he's shutting the door. He's not giving them any life. It was a slow death for Washington. It really was. Yeah. Tuukka had a big part in that.
Yeah, put him in a sleeper hold, going shh in their ear as he just slowly, slowly lulls them to death. Yeah, I think in a game like this, if you wanted to close them out in game five on the road and, you know, get this series over with, you needed him to be a calming influence in that game. And I thought he was with the way he played. We keep saying dialed in, locked in, but that's exactly what Tuukka Rask was tonight. And but to circle back at the question about the quality chances for the Capitals, just to get into some advanced analytics here, 5-on-5. Shot attempts, 57-36 Capitals. Big advantage, right? High danger chances at 5-on-5, 9-7 Capitals. So that, okay, to me tells that the Bruins, when they got their chances, they were higher quality. Makes sense. You know, they scored 3 goals on 19 shots. All 3 goals at 5-on-5, by the way, which we can get into. But I think part of the story here was what was going on in front of Tuukka Rask, and I think it was sort of a continuation of what we saw in Game 4, which was not that it was the exact same thing, but sort of beating the Capitals at their own game defensively. They didn't give them any space to operate. They had really active sticks tonight, I felt. It felt that their sticks were in the Capitals' faces all night. And the one time they didn't have the stick in their face was when Patrice Bergeron sort of fumbled a stick to the ice, and then Connor Sheary had that open look and scored the one goal of the night. And, you know, if Patrice doesn't drop his stick there, they might shut him out. So I think that was a big part of it. The Capitals didn't have much space to work in there. They didn't get many quality looks because the guys in front of them weren't giving it to them either.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And the other part, you're mentioning the active sticks, the street sweeping, as I like to call it, in the defensive zone.
Street sweeper, baby.
Exactly. There was just no room to operate. And the big difference between this game and the previous two games in D.C. Really was the fact that when there were loose pucks there, you were seeing the wingers corralling it and getting the play up the other way. I thought Jake DeBrusk had a real great game in that respect, that he was really engaged in terms of winning loose pucks in the defensive zone, which is something that we've always wanted to see more out of from him, I think. Just, you know, as he transitions from a role of a top sixer to a third liner / fourth line kind of hybrid, you want to see more of that compete. So he's a guy that you saw a lot of that. I thought the fourth line continued their play from Friday.
Crowley, great game, I thought. Lazar, yeah, great so game.
It was really a complete effort, right? I think that you could look at every line and every pairing tonight and say, okay, these guys did this well, you know, and that's
– yep.
And that's what you need to go in a deep run. You can't have one line, as we learned in 2019. You can't have one goaltender, you know, like the goalie's just saving you every night. You need to have a balance there. And I thought tonight was one of their better balances, but you mentioned it. I said it today hoping for it, but when it came winning time, Patrice Bergeron and David Pastrnak and that's what you need, right? You need that first line to grab hold of the moment, not let it be too big for them, and say, hey, what happened in the past is the past. You know, we are what we are, which is one of the best lines in hockey, and we're going to dominate this game. And I thought they were a dominant force in this game. I mean, you know, listen, the goal in the third period happens with them on the ice, I know, but they really bounced back from that in a huge way. One of their better games, I think, of the series, especially movement wise in the ozone. So this team, I mean, with that line, when they're rolling, they're a nightmare to play against. You know, like, they just, right, the way they move around, it's like you can lose track of one of these guys before you even know it, and you're like, wait a minute, who's that? You know,
yeah, they get you spinning. The speed and the coordination combined makes it so ridiculously hard to play against. So yeah, like when they're on, you know, they got you chasing, and that's sort of what we saw. That's what you said, like, we're gonna go dominate this game. I think they said that two games ago at the end of – once they tied game three at the end, like, all right, I'm gonna go dominate the next seven periods. Like, that's really what happened.
Yeah, it was takeover
mode. Last three games.
It was takeover, yeah.
It was total takeover. And David Pastrnak scores, like, one of the most ridiculous goals he might ever score in his career, honestly.
Especially
it's going to be hard for him to score a better goal in his career, considering it was a playoffs closeout game. I know it was just first round game five, but still. Scintillating.
Yeah. For David, I mean, he gets Dowd to bite. He goes toe drag and he drives to the net. That's what I like the most about that. He's driving to the net.
Yep.
He's not making you think he's driving and then dishes it to traffic at the last second. No, he's taking it. And so to see that happen, I mean, that speaks to, I think, Pastrnak's confidence.
Yeah, the floodgates have opened,
I don't think his confidence like was shot per se, but I think breaking through in game four, and it's kind of like, all right, I can do this now. You know, he knows the price it takes now, I guess, to have success, and he's having it.
I think it freed him of all possible mental blocks that might have been building up. I think those are all gone now.
Yeah.
So, I mean unbelievable that call by Pastrnak. And you're right. Yeah, there were a lot of plays where he would make that sort of play to dangle into the corner and then just try to dish it to Bergeron or Marchand to throw out in front. But he just, he took matters into his own hands, which I thought that was an incredible play. And Patrice Bergeron just in the right place at the right time, forces a turnover on his second goal. And he scores his first goal from the high slot where he scored before in the series. So I don't know what the Capitals were doing there. I think a lot of people might make the excuse for the Pastrnak goal that it was just terrible defense by Nick Dowd and, both Capitals defensemen just sort of mannequins down there. But I think it sort of speaks to what we were saying about after game four, which is, we can have a debate. Was that Bruins domination or was that the Capitals just choking and wilting? And I think it was just a little of both. I think Pastrnak was locked in, and I think the Capitals are just sort of fading away, and they just sort of they let the whole series slip away once they let that game get tied up in game three. And just it was all Bruins from there on out. And I know the Capitals had their chances tonight, but I still didn't really see the urgency and the energy that you thought you needed to see from the Capitals tonight. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what people in the DC area are saying.
Yeah, and I think the way that you're saying it is a little bit of both is correct. And I think how I phrase it is the Capitals saw what the Bruins were willing to do, like working-wise, energy-wise, efficiency-wise, and they said, well, oh my God, we can't match that. I think it was almost like that when the Bergeron line kicked it into high gear and McAvoy's playing like how McAvoy played in the series, which was unbelievable, by the way. I think the Capitals looked at that and said, yeah, we can't do that right now. Sorry. We'll get them next year. I think there was a mental aspect of that. I don't know if I said it in our group chat or another one that I'm in, but I said the Capitals can't wait to be down two. They can't wait to quit. They couldn't wait to just be done with this because this really
every year
was
with this team though.
Miserable experience for them.
I know it's easy to just look at the large sample size, but it is quite a sample size at this point. It's like, yeah, we'll get them next year. Yeah, we'll get them next year for 16 years in a row. It's like, when is next year going to come?
This was the worst I've seen them, in all of the disappointments and all their letdowns.
That's fair. Yeah. They're not always this bad.
This
one was bad.
Backstrom was a non-factor. Yeah. He was a non-factor for all five games. Kuznetsov came off the COVID list. Not an easy thing to do. I know, but he comes off the COVID list, does nothing. Does literally nothing.
Negative. He cost them a goal tonight, I thought. I thought they still could have probably scored that goal even if Tuukka wasn't touched.
Yeah, and then you have Wilson wasn't Wilson. I wonder if the eyes of the league being on him rattled him a little bit because he really didn't start anything until Charlie Coyle's goal in game four, and that was it.
Yeah, were off.
Oshie was not 100%, and also they were playing Oshie at center for half the series, which was I don't really think that's a – I know he's – I know you're kind of short on options, but Jesus, I think anyone's better than that because of what he can do on the wing,
No, 5'8", 170 is speed sniper isn't ideal to put at center.
Yeah, so just a lot of no-shows from the Capitals' best, and they coincided with – Bergeron, Marchand, Pastrnak, and McAvoy, and Taylor Hall, and these other guys in the Bruins sort of coming alive here and staking claim to the series. So, sort of just the cavalcade of errors and unmatchable sort of things that the Bruins were doing that the Caps looked at and said, "No, we can't do that. Sorry."
Speaking of Wilson and speaking of McAvoy, that was a hell of a hit that McAvoy dished out on Wilson. So I think, yeah, I think McAvoy dominated the whole series, really, but he asserted himself more and more as the series went along. And he's just, he's showing how you can take over a game and dominate a game without even getting on the score sheet if you're a defenseman, a dominant two-way defenseman like he is. And I know he had 3 assists in game 4, and so he's not completely shut out on that in that regard. But just the way he zips through the neutral zone and his skating, the way he sets people up, sets entire plays up, it's in the physical aspects, the defense, it's just dominating. And like, I just think people need to understand how rare it is for a defenseman to be playing this well at this young of an age. You know, like if he continued to struggle, and like the question for me with McAvoy is, let's see how he does over an entire playoff run. Can he sustain this for 4 rounds? Like, I don't know. I don't know if he can do that yet, but like, even if he faltered in this series, I would still say, guys, he's 23. Like, franchise defensemen don't, like, they don't really flourish completely until, you know, 26, 27. It takes a long time for that position to really develop. It's just because of how cerebral it is, especially when you have to play the whole 200 feet and you're dependent on to do that. He's dependent on to do that right now as the number one guy playing 25, 30 minutes a night or whatever. And he's been incredible. I think rare that we see like a bad moment from him. That's like, it's crazy that to think about how well he's playing.
Yeah, it's true. And you know, I remember watching Seth Jones during the 2019 playoffs and even last year with the Blue Jackets being like, man, if McAvoy can be Seth Jones, I mean, the Bruins are going to be in a great spot, right? That minute eating two zone, you know, all 3 zones, rather, defensemen who can just make plays at both ends of the ice and just drive an entire defensive unit. And Jones did that when he was 25, you know, because he's a 2013 draft pick, I believe. So you know, he did it at a little bit older of an age than McAvoy is right now. So it is rare, and I know we're always going to want more X out of McAvoy, whether it's shots or goals or power play, quarterbacking, whatever the case may be. But right now, I would be hard pressed to find a defenseman I would want more in the remaining field at 5-on-5 than Charlie McAvoy. He's been playing that well. The list is a short one, right? It's probably Victor and I Hedman. Haven't seen. Yeah, I was gonna say I haven't seen a ton of Hedman this series, so I don't know how he's looking right now. But just based on what he's done in the past, I mean, that'd be a guy.
The fact that that's it, you know what I mean? Like, I could be wrong. There might be other guys that I'm not thinking of, but still, like Shea Weber, but he's like 80.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and does he still have that same mix of pushing pace the other way while also defending at an elite level?
Yeah, like does Roman Josi hit or play defense as well as Charlie McAvoy? I don't think so.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. McAvoy is sort of like the model of like that new defenseman who plays with pace, can hit, can also make some really pretty plays at the offensive end in terms of passing and whatnot. So, you know, he is the total package in terms of what you want out of his 27 minutes per night. And I mean, the good news is he didn't look overmatched in the series, no matter what they threw at him. And so big step forward for him, big step forward. I mean, first year of truly leading this defense, and they eliminate a pretty high powered, heavy team in 5 games, no matter how they looked. You know, the McAvoy Grizzly pairing was a huge factor in why they won that series. As easily as they did, I should say.
Yeah, Grizzlick I thought was good again tonight too. So, I mean, I have questions about how he's going to hold up physically. I mean, we'll see. But, like, the fact that he got through this series against a big physical team with big physical forwards is a great sign. And so, like, that to me is really the only question with both those guys, but particularly McAvoy, since he's, like, the lead guy in charge, the lead dog on that defense, is can he do it for another series and another series and another series throughout the playoff run? You know, they would be Conn Smythe worthy if he plays this way for an entire playoff run. So, I mean, that's really the only question is, can he do it consistently and sustain it? But obviously the potential is there, the ability is there, and like it's been fun to watch. So I guess it's not really much else to take away from that game tonight. And really, like, now that the series is over, we don't really need to go back and review too much of what we were talking about. I guess we can look ahead to the next round, and it looks like they're going to get some rest here because Pittsburgh and Islanders are tied 2-2. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. It's 2-2 there.
That feels like that's going six or seven. Oh, it's got to go six, but it feels like it's going seven. So
yeah, yeah. I mean, those teams are really close, especially since the move from Varlamov to Sorokin there. So we're going to see how that transpires here. Between those two teams, I said it today, and I still believe it, that the Islanders are the better matchup for the Bruins. Based on the post-deadline head-to-heads I saw between the Bruins and Islanders, I feel like with Taylor Hall and Lazar and Riley, this Bruins team is better equipped to handle the Islanders. The Penguins worry me a little bit with Jeff Carter. I always tend to kind of fear teams that have a great third-line center. You know, he's being asked to be a third-liner. He's been a second-liner or first-liner his entire career.
Yep, he's scoring. He's finding the net. So
exactly.
It's a little scary.
So that's it. And obviously the other factor there is that the Bruins wouldn't have home ice advantage like they would against the Islanders. So that's also a factor as well, why I feel that way. So
I like that. Yeah. Game seven at home. You got to feel better about that. It's notwithstanding the last time they had a game seven at home.
Yes.
sorry to bring that up. The Islanders, like, they play that heavy style, and like Barry Trotz defense is something that scares me, the way he can lean on opposing teams, but they just don't really have the firepower. I don't think, you know, I think they could muck it up and keep games close. And like, you know, if it comes down to a bounce of the puck, that could get a little squirrely, but they don't have like the high end offensive talent, not much beyond Matt Barzal really, that really scares you. Whereas if this were Pittsburgh in this first round and the Bruins were up 3-1, I would have totally given Pittsburgh a chance to come back in that series because of Crosby and Malkin and Letang and that high end talent that's proven that they could come through in big games. So yeah, I agree that I'd probably rather play the Islanders, even though they do have that heavy physical style. But at least the Bruins proved in this series against the Capitals that they can sort of beat those kinds of teams. It's not always going to be – they're not always just going to get smothered like they have in the past against those bigger teams. But, yeah, I tend to agree, especially with the goaltending thing. You know, if it's Sorokin, you know, it's another series where you have a huge advantage in goal, you know. So
the other part
they might have the huge advantage in goal almost anyone they play, you know.
Yeah, the other part of it, too, is that if you look at recent history, right, since Trotz took over the island, the Bruins have played very well against them. I think this year they were 3-5 against them, but entering this year they were 6-0-1, or they were 5-0-1 against them since Trotz took over. So like,
I have a hard time even counting anything the Bruins did before the trade deadline. Just they've been such a different team.
Oh yeah, no, exactly. That's why
I say that without knowing how they played against the Islanders post-trade deadline, you know.
So. Well, they won, I believe, all three games. All three games were at home. We got to note that, of course. But you had the overtime winner, Taylor Hall, scored. That was the last game. But they had the two games set where they, right after the additions of Hall, Lazar, and Riley. And those were, I thought, clinics by the Bruins. Like, they played just 60-minute games, and the Islanders were like, oh my God, what is this team, right? And even before the deadline, right? And I said this today. You look before the deadline, the Bruins-Islanders games, they were all close games. And it just came down to one breakdown in the third period or one bad goal in the third period, and the Islanders won. There were no blowouts except for the one that ended 7-2, or I think it was 7-2. But if you look back, that game I think was 3-2 entering the third period. So like, it wasn't like it was truly a blowout per se. It just, the wheels fell off the Bruins. So
right now the games will be close if they play the Islanders.
Yeah, I just think when it comes to the Penguins, I'm sorry. I think that you're talking about maybe some more 6-5 kind of games. And while I don't hate that for the Bruins, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Jeff Carter, you know, Jake Guentzel, Brian Rust, Kasperi Kapanen, you go up and down their lineup, they have some more shooters, I think, than the Islanders do. And I think if it's a 3-2 kind of game with the way Rask is playing and the way the defense is limiting high danger opportunities, I just like the Bruins in that kind of style, I would say, more than playing a 6-5 kind of style right now.
One last message for me before we call this a podcast for the night. That's the Felger's going to do that tomorrow, mocking us, and they're going to make it sound like the Bruins lost this series in five games, I imagine. Mm-hmm. That's also a bluff for Adam Jones, who had me on last Friday. I appreciate that. I always have fun talking to those guys. But, you know, he was really pushing back when I was telling him about how the Bruins had the big advantage in net. And, you know, I think that really played out. You know, that was after Samsonov made that blooper to lose that game. And not that he was awful in games four or five, but I just thought, you know, Tuukka Rask is just on a different level right now. Different level from Samsonov, for sure. And so I think that really came to fruition in the last couple of games, and it might come to fruition in the rest of the playoffs as they go along, as long as the Bruins are alive. But yeah, my parting thought with the Bruins moving forward is that I think, unlike the last three playoff runs, 2018 through 2020, I think they have much more depth at forward, and I think they have a better mix on defense in terms of size and skill and all that stuff. I don't think they're going to need Tuukka to steal them games as much as they needed in those other playoff runs. Even in 2019, when they had an easy road, like that Columbus series wasn't easy for them. Tuukka had some big games in that series. So I don't think you're going to see a ton of that. You're not going to – I don't think you're – if they play the Islanders especially, I don't think you're going to see a lot of games where the Islanders are peppering them with 50 shots from, like, all this, you know, all this high-end talent. Like,
yeah, it's not their nature. All over the place.
Right, yeah, it's not going to be like that, and so like I don't think they're going to need to lean on Tuukka as much as they have, which is just a great sign for them, and they're not going to have to lean on any particular forward line, and you know, either way, I think the fact that this first line has really come alive in the last two games and change is scary for the opposition, I would say. What do you think?
No, especially considering that we still haven't seen that third line activate the way that they had late in the regular season. So there's still more to give from there. We still haven't seen David Krejci explode the way that I think that we all know that he's capable of, especially connecting with Hall and Smith. So there's still another level for this team to get to, I would say. So that's encouraging on its own. But also I think that, you know, I haven't seen Rask play this well in terms of calmness and poise, probably, I would say, since 2013, in terms of an extended stretch, right? Like, he had that bad game he had that bad goal against the Rangers, right? And I think it was game three where he falls on his ass and they put one in. And from that point on,
that was like 19 years ago.
I know, but from that point on through the Penguins series, he was like untouchable, right? And so
he was Conn Smythe in that series.
Yeah, so I feel like he's getting close to that level. But also, I would also say that maybe the Columbus series in 2019, the second half of that series, he dialed it up to this level or close to it. So he's really locked in right now. And if that can remain the case, and if the team can get some of the injured defensemen back, Lozon, if they get some good news on Kevin Miller, we'll see what happens there. They're going to get a little bit of a layoff here. That should help those guys. So if that happens, I mean, you got to feel good. You have to, just with the way they look right now, the way they're playing. So you just hope that is what plays out for this team. Because if they do, you got a contender here. You got a legit Stanley Cup contender.
I think so. And you just hit on it. The injuries of the defense are piling up. And so, like, when I say, can they hold up over the course of the playoffs, that goes for the whole group. You know, like, they can't really afford to get banged up much more. And, in fact, they could probably use getting Kevin Miller back in the lineup so we don't have to see much of Jared Tenorti. And, you know, that was a good call by us, saying, well, they'll probably put Tenorti in. I mean, but that just speaks to how little they have in the way of options right now. So you got to hope that the defense can get healthy in this time off they have. And, you know, whoever they play at the beginning of that series, we'll see if they have a little rust, if they look a little unfocused to start. That's pretty normal. That happens to a lot of teams when they have a long layoff between series. But this is a team that looks pretty locked in right now. They look like they're on a mission. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see if they get any further than this, but you got to feel good about them getting out of the division right now at this point anyway. You like their chances either way against either Pittsburgh or the Islanders, especially with how grueling that series is going to be for those two teams. So that's my thought on that. Any other parting thoughts, Ty?
No, I would say that this is probably going to be the offseason where some big changes happen in Washington. I wouldn't be surprised if Kuznetsov is traded. That's been a rumbling, and I don't think his play in this series gave you any indication that he's someone that you are now like, oh, no, you can't trade him.
Oh, yeah, not exactly a guy to invest in.
Yeah, so I'm curious what happens because Ovi's a free agent, right? So they got to re-sign him, and does he have any say in Kuznetsov? I mean, obviously they're both Russians. They seem to have a pretty good chemistry, you know. So let's see what happens there. But they vanquished the beast, and you know, I think that now you can stop fearing the Capitals because you really didn't have a reason to once Braden Holtby left.
Yep, no longer. I do not fear that team at all. Yeah, I would be fascinated to see Ovechkin play in another uniform and see how the Capitals look without him because of everything I've been saying about him as the captain and the leader. You know, if they turn that team over to John Carlson or something as the captain, maybe they look a little different because they've had so much talent, a lot of teams, a lot of division winners, a lot of top seeds that really fizzled out in the playoffs and saw it once again. All right. Well, if you made it this far, thanks. I love you. This is another special edition of the Sidelines Podcast. I am Matt Dolph. He's Ty Anderson. We're going to keep doing this, folks. We're going to do this as long as the Bruins are alive. Win or lose, we're going to keep doing these Bruins post-game podcasts in the playoffs. People seem to be enjoying them, and we are enjoying them. So I hope you had fun tonight. I hope you had fun watching that series. And we'll talk to you again after game one next series.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.